Even though much of our attention is on Capitol Hill and the controversy surrounding President Trump in Ukraine, there is a Democratic presidential primary race underway. And we've been talking with the 2020 candidates ahead of the primaries and the general election. Today we have Democrat Joe Sestak, a former congressman from Pennsylvania. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having me aboard. It's a really great opportunity.
Well, Mr. Sestak, you've been called probably the most interesting Democrat you forgot was running. Let's talk a little bit about why some people believe you're interesting. First, you were the highest-ranking military officer ever elected to Congress back in 2006. You served in the Navy for three decades. You were the director of defense policy under President Clinton, but you were also late to this race. You're coming in somewhere between 0 and 1% in the polls. You haven't participated in the last debates. You haven't qualified for the next debate. But despite all of this, you hate the word long shot. What keeps you committed to this campaign?
Well, first, I was late because my daughter's brain cancer, which initially drove me into politics back in 2005 when I was in the Navy. I got out to take care of her and ran for health care for everyone that saved her life. So it came back last year. And so I wasn't thinking of getting in. But as I sat with her, particularly as she went through protein beam radiation, that burning radiation for her brain that saved her again, I decided I needed to get back in. And so while some may say it's late, I think my ideas are timely. What I also learned in the military was amateurs do tactics, experts do logistics. So what we wanted to do, because we were, in other people's mind, late, we secured the beachhead in Iowa because you have to identify 1,800 people for the caucuses, one in each of the precincts. We went everywhere, 17,000 miles we traveled, 235 events to do that.
Let's talk about Iowa for a moment. You have really taken on an unorthodox guerrilla-style strategy there in Iowa, more than any other candidate to date. Why did you decide to take on this approach?
It's always about people, going to them. And so that's why we went everywhere, particularly the rural counties where so few do. And by and large, that's sometimes why they feel forgotten by my party. That's why I took that approach.
Let's talk a little bit about the issues. You mentioned health care with your daughter, and I'm glad that she's on the road to recovery. But
Thank you. You've
been inspired by your status as a veteran and your interest in creating a national health system. And in this, you talk about employing physicians, modeling sort of like the Veterans Health Administration. Talk about what it would look like.
Yes, it's because I have seen the rural counties, hospitals in the rural counties closing, over 100 already this year. So the VA has been shown by the New England Journal of Medicine to be number one in terms of being tied or better than any private or public health care provider. So I want a public option that proves itself that that is one way to go for the rural counties, because no for-profit hospitals are going to go back there. But I also will have a public option that will prove itself as we head towards Medicare for all for the rest of the nation. But my thing is, I want to make sure that when 255 million Americans are in some form of private health care, we just don't mandate it like in the next 2 or 4 years. We give it a transition of choice that proves itself to get us there.
Let's talk about some of the other issues. Another signature issue includes combating climate change. It's on many of our minds right now. In your first 100 days in office as president, what would be your top priorities in combating the climate crisis?
After I hold a town hall in the middle of America, and I will do those every 2 weeks, I will fly to Paris to convene the 194 of the 196 nations that are not meeting their national commitment under the Paris Climate Accord, including us, because we know that here in America, even if we do get to zero in greenhouse emissions, it won't matter unless the rest of the world does it. Because 85% of the emissions that have to go to zero come from abroad. Yes, here at home, we have to have a carbon fee dividend. Yes, we have to stop fossil fuel subsidies and move them to green energy. And yes, we must stop offshore drilling and in the Arctic and on Native American lands. But we also have to convene the world, because it is one world, and that catastrophic threat, if it isn't stopped everywhere, will explode on us. But one last thing I do need to bring up. We need a new plan called Training for a Lifetime, because when the coal miner is kicked out of his job, who is there to give him a training? Nobody. We spend less on the artisans, the labor force, those who use their hands and their minds, and many of them may be affected by the change to climate change efforts. So we have to make sure that we spend money, and I've set aside $200 billion, so they're trained to go into green manufacturing jobs. We spend less, as I mentioned, than any developed country on the 65% who don't have a college education, but they really run our economy.
$200 billion is a lot of money. Where would that money come from?
Absolutely. I have laid out where we can get over $1 trillion, and that's only part of it. So take carried interest. Those are those equity gentlemen and gentleladies up in Wall Street that even though they don't invest their own money, they actually can get it taxed as though they are investing their own money, which is much less than you can have a soldier in Afghanistan who has to pay at the regular income tax rate. It's called carried interest. So that is a significant part of it. Also, we have to bring back at least half of that corporation's tax cut that this administration gave. Why? They were supposed to bring that money back from overseas, and the reduction in their corporation tax amount was supposed to be invested into jobs, into helping people grow in capital with new jobs. Didn't happen.
I'm wondering how, though, you'd get Republicans in Congress on board with this plan, with all of
it. Thank you for that question, because that is the major reason I would be running, to unite this country. What this nation most wants, most yearns for, most needs is someone where people know, all Americans know, that even when they disagree well with him, he will always be accountable to them above one's party, above self, and any special interest. That is what we need more than anything, or else we'll end up, much as you're pointing out, with another president that will only be able to do executive orders and the next one rips it out. America can't go sideways anymore.
Speaking of our current president, more Democrats are now calling to impeach the president after this whistleblower complaint surfaced. Should House Democrats pursue impeachment?
I think when the commander-in-chief who occupies the presidency reaches out to a foreign leader and invites him to actually violate the most sacred sanctity of America, fair and free elections, there is an obligation upon the Congress to follow its constitutional duty, investigate it, and if it bears out that the evidence is pretty compelling and conclusive that he did that, then they must proceed with impeachment.
A few more questions for you. If you were to become president, what are the first three issues that you would take on that are important to you when you start?
That first day, because unity of America, if we're ever to meet our defining challenges of the time, is the absolute prerequisite after beating Mr. Trump. I would hold that town hall and do it every 2 weeks so all Americans know I'm there listening to you, but letting you know where I stand. Then I'd fly to Paris for climate change, stop over at NATO to let our allies know this past administration kicked you and told you it was a wrap as far as our great leadership of a rules-based world order, but we're back. And then I'd come home and announce this training for a lifetime as I came home, and then I'd walk into a mosque to let everyone know that, you know, we're all equal, and I love you all. And then I'd walk to a gun show, perhaps invite Ollie North to go with me, who I knew who ran my backside back when in the 70s when I thought I was going to Marine Corps. And we may disagree, but I'm going to go there to say I am for an assault weapons ban, but I love that you do like to hunt.
What would an assault weapons ban look like for you, and how would you make that happen?
That would look like just like we had in the 1990s, where these semi-automatic weapons were banned, and, you know, the deaths of police officers plummeted to near zero because of that. But I want to go to that gun show to say, no, the Heller decision was good in that it said there's no slippery slope here. They said in that decision that that doesn't mean all weapons should be out there on the streets of America. We must end semi-automatic weapons from being that are used for war. We don't want those on the streets of America. And that's why I've got to go to the people on this, not just the elected representatives in Senate, just like I did in my district.
Democratic 2020 presidential candidate Joe Sestak, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me aboard.